The People's Choice Podcast Awards voting is up on the 31st of July, so go to podcastawards.com to nominate the following shows. Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast in the categories of education and also storyteller drama. The Centralist in the category of politics and news, that's with show host Joe Montaldo. Science and Beyond in the category of science and medicine, also with show host Joe Montaldo. The Outer Realm in the category of society culture, with show hosts Michelle DeRoche and Amelia Pisano. And the Pittsburgh Paranormal Chasing Prophecy in the category of religion and spirituality. There's another category that opened up for us recently, the People's Choice, so please select for this category as well. Go to podcastawards.com to vote for these five shows and any others you enjoy listening to. That's podcastawards.com. And remember, voting ends July 31st, so go ahead and get your votes in.
Good evening and welcome to Monday night segment of the Horsefly Chronicles Radio with myself, Julia Siracusa, and Philip Siracusa. We are broadcasting live from the United Paranormal Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans. This evening's show is sponsored by Carnation, so we want to thank them for their sponsorship. You will have to do a few things in order to participate. Go over to the YouTube channel, UFO Paranormal Radio, and get into chat. Subscribe if you haven't. You can go into all of the United Public Radio Facebook stations, Twitch, SoundCloud, and Podbeam. You can also go into the UFO Undercover with Joe Montaldo on Facebook as well. I can only respond to your comments on our YouTube channel on UFO Paranormal Radio. And if you have any questions for our guests, please ask. So tonight, guys, we have an amazing guest. So please let's welcome John Bullard to the show. John has been investigating the paranormal since 2008. Childhood experiences intrigued Bullard since the age of 10. Hearing voices and seeing shadow figures, he's begun researching and investigating haunted locations. Throughout the years, John has investigated all over the U.S. and outside the U.S. as well. He starred in the documentary, The House in Between, which is a haunted home, which he has been investigating for over a decade now. You can find this documentary on Amazon Prime and Vudu. He has also just released his new book, A Peek Through the Veil. You can find that book and more info about John on his website, johnbullardpara.com. So let's welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Yay!
How are y'all? Thank y'all so much for having me on. I'm excited to do this and talk about The House in Between and talk about the book as well. It's weird because The House in Between came out May 5th of 2020, so we're like a year and a few months removed, but it's still fresh on my mind and we're still actively investigating the location, so it's still ongoing. So I still like to ramble and talk about The House in Between as well.
Yes, and we had you on our show on another network exactly a year from now. So. Wow. We definitely want to hear all the new things that have been going on and your book.
Yeah, so, John, do us a favor for the new audience. This is a pretty large network. Just take us from the beginning a little bit and how you got started within paranormal and your experiences, and we'll move forward from there.
Okay, awesome. So, yeah, like the little bio said, and you read it off beautifully. Thank you for that. I was around 10 years old, which – you know, I have a bad memory, but I do remember selective things. And the things I experienced as a child is one of the things that always stuck in my head. Those mental images, those instances where things occur. Between 10 and 13 years old is when I had some really dramatic things happen to me. And it started with, I'm from Mississippi, and my grandparents live in a small town in Mississippi called Brookhaven, Mississippi, which if you're not familiar with Mississippi, you'll have no idea where that is. But he owned a junkyard, so he did a lot of estate sales. So I would go with him on the summers, and I would help him move stuff out and get stuff organized for estate sales. And I had things happen periodically, but really the summer when I spent time doing stuff with him with the estate sales, we were going to a lot of older homes and different places all over the state of Mississippi. And there was one house in particular. There's a visual representation of it in my book. But I remember being in a living room of an antebellum type style house. And my grandfather was out back doing something, moving some stuff out and getting organized and tagging it. And I just remember it was only the two of us there, but I heard clear conversation up the stairs. It was two people talking back and forth. I mean, it was two people talking back and forth. And I was like, well, who else is in the house? I thought we were the only people. And then I would see shadow figures walking back and forth upstairs. And then at the bottom room, I saw a shadow figure walk by too. It looked like a shadow of somebody walking. I didn't think shadow figure at the time because I didn't really know what that was. So come to find out, I walked upstairs and turns out nobody was in the house. And I just always thought that was so bizarre. And it continued to happen to me at select locations. And it didn't necessarily have to be like a Victorian mansion. It was just different places I would go to, and it would kind of just speak to me. Like I would hear somebody like whispering in my ear, but nobody was there. So I just kind of ignored it for a while, and I obviously never told anybody about it. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my grandfather because I'm a small child, a young, I guess, coming into a teenager, and nobody's really going to believe that you heard something. So I just kind of kept it to myself. And as I got older, I began to research stuff when the internet became a thing and searching ghosts and paranormal and the supernatural. So anything I could get my hands on, books as well. Anything that was written, I would want to learn more about why this would be happening. Because I'm trying to rationalize it, and maybe this is my imagination. I don't know for sure. and there's things that I had happened too. I sound like a weirdo. It's in the book as well. I used to have like reoccurring dreams over and over, and I don't know. I don't do a deep dive in dreams. I know people look at sleep paralysis and things like that, but the dream that I had over and over recurring was actually a dream of a witch, which is odd, but I could literally fall asleep. This is when I was 10 or 11 years old. I could fall asleep and think about the witch mentally. I can still see her. I drew a picture of her. My artist did a picture of her in my book. But I could fall asleep thinking about this witch, and I could peg this dream and go into basically the same dream. And I did this for almost a year on and off. Very odd, very bizarre. I eventually grew out of it, but I just remember being able to like. It's crazy because like if you ever want to like think a dream, like something you want to dream about, imagine being able to go to sleep and you can actually like visualize the dream and bring it to life. That's what I was able to do with this witch. And we would have different interactions. It wasn't necessarily scary every time, but I could always bring her into my dreams. So I've never knew what to make of that. I never really talked to anybody who specializes in dreams. I've talked to a few mediums and stuff about it, and I've got some interesting feedback. But so all those things combined kind of propelled me into trying to understand what was happening to me. I don't consider myself a medium. I think there's definitely people out there who have a skill set. I think there's people out there who claim to have a skill set and are not mediums. So I think it muddles the field, unfortunately. And I've seen people in the act lying to people, like moving objects and trying to manipulate people. And I'm just not about that. One thing, if you're a true investigator, and I've been doing this for 13 years, and there's people who've been doing it way before me, but I consider 13 years for me a long time in the field. And if I ever had to fake evidence or manipulate somebody, like what is this for? If you are a true investigator and you want to do this for the right reasons to document clean, clear evidence and push us forward to really understand what's going on, because it's definitely there's something out there. And whether you're a skeptic or not, we need skeptics in the field because they keep us honest. But going back to me as a child, I understood the definition of a medium and a clairvoyant, and it didn't hit me because that's not what I am. And the title of my book is what I claim to be and what it is for me, which is a peek through the veil. So what I consider what I have is things come to me, but I can't control it. I can't
So,
hold my skill set.
John, I want to jump in there because you said some interesting things that I have experienced, previous guests have experienced, and I'm going to tell you that it all stems from childhood,
Yes,
right? So,
always, every
I mean,
single
I
time.
cannot tell you how many people, including myself, and childhood, where did it start? Childhood. And the witch was another thing that it just rang true because I used to have nightmares of this witch. I didn't know who she was.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
And I was about 7, 8 years old living in Staten Island, New York. And I remember my mom's getting ready. We were going to go out. I'm a little kid. And on the television, there's this witch. And I could swear that she's talking to me, saying eventually she's going to get me. At such a young age, I just ran in my mother's room and started crying. But That's true, by the way. And it's like, you know, all these people, including myself, we see the shadow. I seen the shadow. The witch is so common, and we try to figure out these things, and we think it's our mind, you know. But then after doing paranormal for so long, you realize it's not your mind or my mind or 200 other minds. It's actually true.
Yeah.
And so you don't call yourself a medium, but yet you have abilities, because in order for these spirits to get into your mind or your mind's eye through visual and audible, you have to have some kind of a second sight of ability, like a lighthouse, where these things can communicate with you. So, John, that's fascinating, and that makes it more believable, what you're saying. So I want you to continue from that point.
Yeah, and here's my I want people to buy the book, so go buy A Peek Through the Veil. But this is my witch here.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, hold it up close to the camera.
Wow, I love it. Yes, I've seen that.
Look at that. Wow.
I never knew that.
Oh, wow. You drew that, John?
So, no. So, let me, we'll go back to my childhood, but let me talk about the visuals for the book real quick. So, I knew what I wanted to do with the book. I love charcoal drawings and paintings. So, I wrote this book based on I don't like to read. I wanted it to be an easy read. It's something that I've been wanting to do for several years. And I've documented notes for, I think, 8 or 9 years back, and I kind of put them all together to help write some of the book. But I actually met my artist, Andres, through Instagram. It was crazy, and it's a blessing in how cool social media is nowadays. I knew what I wanted, so I typed in some haunted art, and some different artists came up, and I talked to 2 or 3 of them, and they just didn't have the same vision. But I met this guy, and I gave him, for example, the dreams I had. I wrote big paragraphs out, and I described my experiences, and I said, create this in a painting. I gave him 3 examples to see what he would come back with. Blew my mind. He just was, me and him were synced up from day one, and there's 33 original drawings in the book. So I wanted the book to be very heavy visual to help tell a visual story of the things that I was talking about. So he's incredible. He's from Chile. So he's from another country, and we interacted back and forth through Instagram. And my hope is before the end of the year, I want him to fly over here. Obviously, COVID and all that stuff kind of put a damper on things, but I would love to be able to meet him in person. That would be really cool, because he helped give such a really cool heartbeat to this book, and it's really incredible. So,
that's a beautiful picture.
John, can you hold up the book one more time with the witch? I just want to see that really.
Yeah. Yeah, not a problem.
As you're holding that up on YouTube. Yeah, just go close to the camera too when you get a chance. So you see this? Can you just lift it up a little bit?
Yeah, we got a good view.
Up a little bit more. There you go. You see the elbow?
Yeah.
The arm? Does that look familiar? I had that in a picture that was caught in a mirror in 2017 in our basement. The arm. We're going to send that to you at the end of the show.
Okay.
We have, it was caught once in the mirror in our basement, in the arm, even though you had, someone did this,
I remember it. Yep.
It's going to bug you out. It's crazy, right? It's all insane. Well,
and these pictures were detailed. Like, he did a great job, but like specifically, and I'm a terrible drawer, but I did a very rough sketch to get him where I needed to be and gave him some examples. But I mean, every image in the book is very close to what I experienced. One of the chapters in the book, and we'll go back to my childhood, is doppelganger, because I think it's really, really interesting, and I think that it's something that's not talked about enough in the paranormal field.
Sure.
And it's something that I've experienced about, but he did this as well, so this is obviously me, and then that's my doppelganger. Let me go back. There we go.
Wow. So,
like I said,
you know, do you want to talk about that a little bit, the doppelganger?
Yeah, we definitely, you definitely have some stories about that.
Yes, I know. Well, look, it's so fun because we get off track. Let's talk doppelganger. Do it. let me hear your stories first, and then I'll jump in.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you said it's not talked about enough, and you're correct on that. It's not. And I remember taking pictures when we first experienced this paranormal activity years ago in our home. And I thought it was the back of my wife through the reflection of the mirror.
Yeah.
Only to find out it was something trying to mimic her. And as time went on, and we had investigators here, you'd hear my kids, but it wasn't my kids.
And I think that's one of the most creepiest
that
things.
That is creepy.
That
they
we,
try to imitate,
yeah,
mirror
scary.
You
yeah.
to almost perfection.
Yeah, and there's two things with that too. They mirror you to try to. It's almost like if you think about like a childlike spirit. You know, maybe it's not a child. Something that's trying to be innocent to draw you in to make you more vulnerable. So there's that. And then another thing, one of my theories with the doppelganger thing associated with the paranormal, is that you know, in a lot of locations, we're asking these spirits to use our devices, use our energy, connect with us, interact with us. And in theory, if you're capturing audio, is one of my favorite things. I love EVPs, silent EVPs, audio recordings, yeah. analog and digital. And if you watch The House in Between, you'll see a visual representation of my through the veil. I'm in a cemetery testing a camera. This is old footage they just put in the documentary to show. But I hear a little boy whisper in my ear. And we're looking at a cemetery, like grave way off. And it says, in here, as clear as day in the audio, the video. But there's four other people around me. They don't hear anything, but you see me react. And that's a good example of my peek through the veil because I heard it real time, but I can't hone it. But going back to the doppelganger, it's if we're asking these entities, these spirits, whoever we're communicating with to interact with us, it makes sense that if they're drawing our energy and we do capture an EVP, why then would they not be able to use our vocal tone? You know, so that's something to think about. And I don't know that it's accurate, but it's interesting. We had there's several stories in Doppelganger that I wrote about. That's why I wrote about the chapter. And there was a guest that came to the house in between. Super nice guy. He's a big dude. And he captured an EVP. He was upstairs and said, you know, hey, I'm here. It's just you and me. You know, let's communicate. And he got a clear, I call it class A EVP. And the EVP was, he said, it's just you and me. And the EVP said, me and you. So it's almost like it mirrored what he said, and it sounded identical to this dude's voice. He's a big guy, kind of raspy. And the EVP sounded almost like him, but just a slight more raspy. So like that was just like the aha moment. I was already writing the chapter when this happened. We let him come in the house and he captured that. And it was kind of like a cherry on top of this chapter in the book, because I'm like, it literally mirrors what you say. It has your vocal tone, but it's just slightly more raspy. So it's interesting.
That is interesting. Back years ago, my wife was recording my son. He was imitating a cartoon back in 2015. And when she played it back, the spirit who tried to sound almost like my son said, let me do injustice, watch. And we sent that out to be analyzed, you know, the recording. I mean, it's chilling. Mm-hmm. I put it on YouTube too. And what you hear is what you get. I mean, it's real. It's real. It's, can you explain it? No, but there's doppelganger, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, many, many of times, you know, I hear my kids coming home from school. I'm home, but they're not home. When you go downstairs, no one's here. This is the past, and you know, we're free of that. But it's scary. That is probably one of the scariest things that you have to deal with. And you have that in the
book.
I
always said, whenever anyone ever asks me, what is the most scary? It's always the mimicking. Because in for me, that's the scariest thing of haunting of our living in our house, and it was definitely the scariest thing.
That's a great story about the kids too. That's I read a story in my book. It was me and my wife. We went to an old Civil War house. It's abandoned out in the middle of small town Mississippi because we had the Civil War here, and we're blessed to be where we are to do some of the investigations because there's just saturated energy all around, you know, like Vicksburg, Mississippi, and Natchez. That's where heavy battles were. And we were in this house in the daytime. We were going to go swim at a pool, and we just happened to stop by and see this house. We had heard about it, and we went inside with, like, we had the paranormal puck at the time, and we set up a still camera, and we were doing some audio recording, and we captured this EVP that says, I'm in this room and the other room. And it was so clear. I'm like, I don't understand it. And it sound, I know my wife's voice is, you know, you guys, you know each other's voice. I knew it was Amy's voice, my wife. I knew it was her. But luckily, we had a still camera on us while we were doing what we were doing. And I was closing the case, and both of us were standing there. Neither of us talked, and it was an EVP. But if you close your eyes, 1,000%, it was her voice. And there was a hospital for a long time. So, I mean, the relevance to me, and I'm just guessing, but I always try to like peg like something, you know, why would this make sense? But I'm in this room and the other room. Kind of sounds like a nurse talking to somebody saying I'm in this room and the other room, you know. I don't know if that's the, you know, accurate, but it was such a clear EVP, but it sounded like Amy's voice. I actually didn't show anybody for like 3 weeks because I was like, they're going to think this is fake. You know, luckily we had the video footage to show that, you know, nobody was talking, but, you know, you can overlay stuff nowadays and do all kinds of crazy stuff. It's just like, it's frustrating when you get something that good and, you know, it's authentic, but it's just, it doesn't make sense because it sounds identical to her, but she wasn't talking. So.
That is creepy.
We've had incidents where he thought I was actually on the phone and I wasn't on the phone.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you hear it through the surveillance
camera. Those are things that just really mess with your mind. You know, when you go into an investigation, you get some evidence or some action, like it's exciting, you know, and you still need to wrap your head around it, but you can still, that's what you're there to do. When things like this happen with like a doppelganger or mimicking, those are things that take you to another level because, you know, these are close people to you, whether it's your kids, whether it's your wife, spouse, whatever, you know, girlfriend. And I don't know, that just plays with you a lot more. And it takes you a long time to try to figure out and understand. And it is kind of scary. It's like, you know, why are they trying to mimic that person? Obviously, they're trying to draw you in and make you more vulnerable. And yeah, I've had a lot of experiences throughout my years in the field. It's happened several times. I've had an investigator call out to me at Myrtle's Plantation. He was supposed to be setting up cameras in the cabin on the property. And I said, are you good in there? And he said, yeah, we're all set. Yeah, we're all set. I mean, somebody responded to me. And I walked in there, and there was somebody in there. He walked in the main house to get food because he'd already set up the cameras. I was like, it's one of those things where you just, it will never leave your mind because you still don't understand it.
Yes, I agree.
Sometimes I just try to, you know, think like in my mind, especially when you sleep at night. I tell myself it's fake so I can sleep at night. And
it's not real.
I have to have one eye open. I'm like, it's all fake. Come on, it's your imagination, fellow. But the scary thing is it's true. And the doppelganger is creepy. And, you know, there's just so much. And this is how we know when people, you know, are dealing with these experiences because, again, it starts at the young age most of the time. Mm-hmm. The witch somehow comes into play. Mm-hmm. And then you wind up being a paranormal investigator. You're into it because you're intrigued by it. And you want to know, hey,
you know,
what's the existence of us after us? And I'll tell you this, John. You know, I was a hardcore New York skeptic. I didn't believe in any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought I was nuts myself. Mm-hmm. You know, hearing the voices of teenagers and all these memories of things. But one of the things that I do not recommend, but what did sell me on the truth is when I was with a group of friends in the 80s on a stormy day in my parents' home, and we did for the first time ever a Ouija board.
I knew you were going to. I knew this. Where the story was leading. Go ahead.
And you know, we mocked it, laughed at it, joked around. Wow. It's fake. You're moving it. That kind of stuff. But I tell you what. You know, when you go after the other side and like certain questions of provoking, someone's bound to get hurt in that room.
Yeah.
And one of my friends got really ill really quick as the planquette was going counterclockwise super fast, and we realize we're dealing with something that's not of this realm, and it could be quite frightening. And I tell people, look, you know, people say, well, what's the difference between a Ouija board and a pendulum and a spirit box? It all comes down to the intent. If you have a strong enough intent to want to communicate with something, be careful and protect yourself because you don't know what the possibilities are. You know, I've had people that challenged it, bodybuilders, tremendous bodybuilders I used to be friends with. Oh, it's fake. Come on. Mm-hmm. It's all make-believe. And then 2 days later, they're in a car accident. And, you know, I'm going through my teen years like, is this all coincidence? Mm-hmm. Or are these things really starting to manifest because you're provoking something you cannot see?
Yeah.
And it goes back to, once again, is the intention. So like yourself, John, and myself and other people, there's abilities, the ability to connect with that side. And once you make that connection, you don't lose it. You could try to block it out, but it's always there. And then you try to grow off of it and understand it and then teach people, look, paranormal's real, investigating. Right. And there we do go on, okay? And some things we just don't quite frankly know. Mm-hmm. What do you want to label it as? Demons or angels or our friends that have crossed over. It's really not to dissect all of that.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I wanted to write the book too. I wouldn't call it a paranormal handbook, but I think the way I wrote it, because there's one of the chapters is structured investigations, and it's basically a thank you to all the investigators who do what we do and we do it the right way. And it breaks down an investigation. Like, if you want to do this field and take it seriously, just basically how to get the most efficient evidence out of an investigation, you know. And I respect every investigator who goes out and wants to, you know, get data and all that good stuff. Somebody asked me, I did an interview a few months back, and a guy asked me, you know, why do you think science doesn't take what you do seriously? And there's multiple reasons for that. I think science has already made their mind up. They've closed the door and they like what they like, and they don't want, you know, anything they don't understand, they don't want to let in the room. You know, we're not allowed to party. But another thing with paranormal and supernatural is a great thing, but it's also a dangerous thing, that anybody can be a paranormal investigator. So while you may have, you know, 5 to 10 of the right investigators doing it for the right reason, doing your due diligence, documenting, you also have 30 or 40 people who are doing it because they like Ghost Adventures or Ghost Nation or some of these shows, and they don't really know what they're doing. And I don't blame them. It's not a bad thing, because when I started out back in 2008, I was an idiot. I didn't know what I was trying to do. I wanted to experience something so bad to validate what I had happened to me as a child. Any creak or door moving or noise, I was hoping it was something supernatural. So I get where you're coming from. And, you know, investigating locations is not as sexy as it seems on TV. You know, you look at like a Ghost Adventures episode, which, and I've done their show a couple times, you see the amount of people who it takes and how big that production is. And they're there for 3 or 4 days, you know? So if you go into a location and you're doing an investigation one night, you know, you're not always going to get evidence. You know, not everywhere you go is going to be haunted. And just because you go somewhere that is an active location, you may just strike out and you may just have an unlucky night where you don't get anything. And it's just the patience and the hours put into investigating is a brutal thing. And only people who have actually done it and done it the right way know what you're talking about. So there's the chapter, and there's a big thank you to all the people who do investigation and help propel the field in the right way. And I was going to go back to the Ouija board. You're like blowing my mind. We have so much stuff in common with the witch and the Ouija board, because I was the same way. I've never used the Ouija board, and I didn't mock it, but I just didn't really believe in it. You know, as much as I experienced as a child, you think I'm an idiot to like just shrug off a Ouija board. So we did a location, and it's in the book. I chose 7 locations to write about, and it kind of starts with my first location at King's Tavern in Natchez and kind of trickles down to like Velasquez Murder House, which everybody always asks me standard questions like, where's one place you'll never go back to? Velasquez Murder House is always my question, because I had some really dark stuff happen to me there. The location I'm talking about with the Ouija board is the Decent home. It's in Ellisville, Mississippi. And they did a movie based on the house called The Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey. It's not a paranormal movie, but it's Jones County is where the house is located. And it's a really neat house. There's like by the fireplace, there's a little wall where you push in and pull out. They used to hide slaves behind the fireplace. It's pretty cool. But the owner suggested and was very demanding that we try a Ouija board. So I was like, I don't care. Like, this is stupid. Let's do it. So it was the owner of the house, her friend, one of my investigators, and myself. And we all had our hands on the Ouija board. And the house was definitely active. As soon as we put our equipment down, we heard a woman in the back room say hello, and there was nobody there. I was like, this place is awesome. Like, we've been here for like 3 minutes. This is really cool. So we started doing the Ouija board, and I have a hand on it, and I was just kind of focused in because I wanted to experience it. You know, if I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna take it seriously. I'm not gonna like mock it and just like roll my eyes. Like, if we're gonna do the Ouija board, I'll let somebody else lead. Let's get into it and let's see how, you know, what this is all about. And I had my hand on top of the, I don't even know, what do you call it? The little thing moves?
The planchette.
Yes.
See, I don't know. The planchette, that, right.
Yes.
So, because I don't do anything with Ouija boards. So I had my fingers on top of it. I wasn't actually touching it. And about, I'd say maybe 8 to 10 minutes or so, I kind of felt it like jolt a little bit. And I could tell everybody else's hands because I could see it. Nobody was touching it per se. And it kind of like went forward. And I felt my fingertip. I felt like energy. Almost like if you put it by like an electric, like you get like, you touch like a battery or something like that and you could feel the energy off of it. That's how my hand felt. So I was like, okay, that's weird. And we kept going. Somebody was asking questions. And all of a sudden, we had somebody filming us. And I just remember I kind of blacked out. And it's just like it was about 4 or 5 minutes. And if you watch the video, it's super creepy. Like, I don't like to watch, I hadn't watched it in years, but I'm sitting there and I'm just staring. My eyes are open, I'm not moving, I'm not really blinking. You could just tell like, I'm not there, I'm out. And I'm sitting there, and all I remember, if you've ever had a dream where you wake up and it's like you're falling off a cliff or something, like you jerk awake. That's all I remember. I remember starting. I remember people talking. I remember nothing for a few minutes, and then I jerked awake. And I thought that was weird. I didn't realize 5 minutes or so have gone by. And then the rest of the night, my arm from here to like to my elbow was numb for like hours until like the next morning. It was like if you fall asleep on your arm and it goes to sleep. That's how my arm was. My entire arm, the whole night was numb. And I was like, well, that was weird. So
The pins and needles.
Yeah, the pins and needles, exactly. Yes. So I talked to Rachel Lang, which is she's a fantastic medium. She's really, really talented. She's one of the few that gives me hope and belief in the field because she's very, very talented. Anyway, I was talking to her one day and she said this sentence. It just blew my mind, kind of how you just mentioned the witch. It kind of gave me chills. She said, and this is probably a year removed from when this Ouija board session happened. She said, I see you did a Ouija board session one time. She said, I don't see that you use it very commonly in your investigations. She said, but there's one instance in particular that I'm picking up on. She said, I don't know where you were. And she said, I don't know if this will make sense or not. She said, but whenever you were doing that Ouija board session, she said, you were going in way too open. She said, you didn't know what you were doing. And she said, something tried to attach itself to you. And she said, you need to stop going to locations so open. She said, you need to think of yourself as Glinda the Good Witch on the Wizard of Oz with a bubble around you, like you're floating away. And like when she told me that, I was like, holy crap. I was like, that is crazy. I mean, because she pegged, I only used it one time. And she said, something happened that was dramatic and something tried to attach itself. So anyway, that long story, I'm trying to tell you, I believe in the Ouija board and I have a newfound respect for it and I have not used it since.
Yeah, you don't know, and
Yeah, I don't like, I agree with you.
I've had experiences, and just really quick, one experience I had was I was with a group, another group of friends, and this is back in 1993,
Long
and
time
we're doing it, and he's telling me that a friend that we knew, this girl that we knew, she died, and she's telling us everything, and we lost contact with her years before. She died of cancer. She told us where she was buried, what cemetery, the plot number, the whole nine yards. And the following day, we went there, and a gust of wind came blowing towards us really strong.
That's in your book.
Yeah, it's in my book. And then she had asked for previously for a pack of cigarettes to put on our grave. We did that. That night, we go back on the Ouija board, and she's talking to us like we're talking, but through the board, like through the planchette's moving. I'm not touching it. He's blindfolded. The words are proper English. And then she goes, I have to go. He's coming. He's coming. I'm like, who's coming? I'm looking around. So, and this is what you don't want to do. I was home alone in my parents' house. Everybody went home. And all of a sudden I'm in the bedroom, and I hear somebody running up my stairs. And I'm like, come on, no way.
Is that when I think it was?
Well, no. Then I open the door, no one's there. And then I shut the door and someone's running up the stairs again. And I'll tell you this, I mean, I had a loaded handgun at the face of that door from dusk till dawn, afraid for my, I was scared, 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 scared. And I says, never again will I touch that board. Because now I'm being haunted by her. Whatever chased her away is now tormenting me. And John, when we talk about spirits, can you hear us? Can you give us a sign, right? And sometimes on the tape recorder, the digital recorder, we get the most valuable, valid information that you cannot debunk. So then my question to you would be, Do you think they always hear us no matter what?
Good question.
That's a great question. You know, I would like to think they do. And I'll kind of reference the house in between because that's somewhere I've done for over a decade. And weirdly, I feel like I've, it sounds crazy until it's not. I feel like I've created a bond with the two dominant spirits that are in that house. And even though they don't react to it sometimes, I feel like they are trying to, I think they hear me. I don't think they can give me a sign every time. It's one of those things where I don't know when you pass over, you know, and everybody's different. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. So, you know, what does it take to interact? You know, we get so selfish as investigators sometimes, like something happens. You're like, can you do that again? It's like, dude, yeah. Come on. Like, you know, like, for example, like, let's say a light shuts off. Like, if you watch the house in between the chandelier or something that we had a focal point on or the baseball that came down the stairs, you know, if that happens, you know, we reset it and ask for it to do it again. Well, that could be the equivalent of us running like 4 miles. You know, it's like, I cannot do that again. I'm having to draw energy and focus, and I don't have the strength to do that. So to answer your question, I hope if you're in a place where you have an intelligent spirit or spirits, my thought process is they can hear you, but they can't always give you a response. They're there, but you know, sometimes they just don't have the ability to communicate back with you.
That's true.
So do you think,
and I do agree with what you said about sometimes you develop this bond with maybe not, you know, good spirits. It is true. I mean, it happened to us.
Well,
yeah, you develop a bond.
And I always tell people, you know, one of my big things is, for investigators, and I'm guilty of this too. And nothing I say is negative. Sometimes I feel like I say something, it sounds negative, but I'm not trying to be negative. As investigators, I think sometimes we need to slow down and pay more attention to the locations that we go to and spend more time at those locations. Because whenever I first started investigating, I wanted to jump around like a rock star and hit every famous haunted location I could, you know, because it's all part of the journey. And that's exciting because you get to travel to these historic places and, you know, some of these are like big mansions. It's like crazy that people allow us to be locked into these places and do these investigations. So it's fun, but spend more time at the same location over and over. You can really start to create patterns. And that's one of me and Brad Cooney, Amy, all the people we do the house between. That's one of our favorite words is pattern, because anything that you can replicate and create a pattern for, it really kind of validates what we're doing in the field. You know, like, for example, the chandelier and the baseball. And there's one of the chapters in my book is called Teaching the Spirits. And that's something that I feel like is attainable, but it takes a long time. You know, we've been doing this house for over a decade and it is not easy. For example, the baseball that's in the documentary, you know, I see some of the reviews. They're like, oh, it's just about a baseball falling down the stairs. It's like, look here, asshole. You don't understand that we've tried this for 6 months over and over to get the spirit to focus on one object and move it. You know, and the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting different results, except if you're in the paranormal field. That's my hokey line. But, you know, we did it for 6 months, and that's a long time. We would go do random investigations 2 or 3 times a week and focus on it, and it never happened until finally you see the clip in the documentary where there's like a dark shadow figure that moves up the wall and the baseball finally comes down. So it happened. And then after it did it one time, then it started happening over and over again. So it's like it was like a learning curve where they had to understand how to manipulate the energy, how to push the baseball. And actually, I'm going to show you this because I nerd out on it. Let me find it. But I did a visual representation of that too that I think is really cool. I should know where it is, but I don't. Once I wrote stuff in my book, I just kind of blocked that out of my head. So I have to like reread my book again. So this is a picture. this is a picture of the stairwell. And so that's me. I know it's kind of hard to see, but that's me right here at the bottom. Where am I at? There we go. That's me at the bottom. And the two dark shadows at the top, there's the baseball right by their hand. So it's showing the two spirits kind of focusing on the ball, trying to learn how to push it down the stairs. Anyway, I put that image in there just because it is teaching the spirits. And the baseball was a good example of it took 6 months for that to be manipulated. But eventually it happened and it started reoccurring almost on command. So it's one of those things where, to go back to your question, I think that they can hear us and understand what we're asking, but they got to figure out how to do it. One of the best movies that's not a paranormal movie, this is also in the book, I think is Ghost with Patrick Swayze. You remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
great.
so like, you know, when he's trying to like learn how to like push the paper cup or whatever, and he keeps going through it, he has to understand how to actually learn how to move objects. You know, that to me is so relevant to somebody who's crossed over, because you can have a haunted location, and no matter where I go into a location, me personally, and I feel like I'm talking to my 2-year-old. I'm going to explain exactly what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, make them understand that we're not here to be aggressive or like, you know, in your face, and nothing we have can hurt you. But you just break it down as simple as it can be, because you don't know who you're talking to. You don't know the intelligence.
True.
You know, you have to just be as nice as possible to try to create an interaction. So I, you know, I never go into a location being aggressive, because, you know, it's just like talking to somebody in real life. If I'm an asshole, you're not going to want to talk to me. So
That's true. And
I never.
you don't want to provoke whatever's there, because that can hurt you
Yeah.
and your team, and that's just
Right.
not
I just there's no
great.
point in it, and you're not going to get a good response. And if that's what you're trying to do, then you know you just want a quick response so you can get scared and you can get out of there. If you're going to go do that, then go watch, you know, Insidious or The Conjuring, or go watch scary movies. Don't go investigate somewhere. So
I
yeah.
agree. And you worked with some really, really good directors on that documentary too. Steve Gonzalez, Kendall Welton, Vera Welton, and Corey Frost. We've had them on our show. What was it like working with them?
Incredible. So I always say you can have, and this is removed from paranormal documentary, but you can have a terrible actor or actress, but you put them in like a Martin Scorsese film or Robert Zemeckis or somebody, like they're going to make you look good. So
Yeah.
Kendall and Vera, totally incredible. The cinematography skill is over the
Oh.
top, and it's just, he's able to tell such a beautiful story. You know, just every shot, every scene, Sleepless Unrest, it's doing fantastic. They just did the real Conjuring Home. That's Kendall and Vera's new
Yes.
documentary. And it's just great. Just the content and the meat of the story is great, but just watching the visuals, because he's just so good at that, it's awesome. And we're blessed to have them on our team. And then Corey
That's
Frost, if I could go back to be my 10 or 13-year-old self, I would become an editor. I think that's the coolest thing in the world. And like the skill set to be able to take, because we shot hours and hours, hundreds of hours of footage during the documentary, The House in Between. And to be able to narrow that down and put it into like an hour and a half and make it flow the way he was able to is a true skill set. So, you know, again, it's all about your editor, your cinematographer. And then Steve, obviously, we know there's you don't have to talk about them. He's one of the OGs of the paranormal. And while we called Steve in for The House in Between, me and Brad, myself, Alice, you know, I've been investigating the house for well over a decade. Brad came in several years later, and this is a good point, kind of a side note. If you have a location and like your baby, you know, don't be scared to let other people come in to see what they can document. You know, I always don't like, I hate the investigators who kind of like want to lock down a location, not let anybody else in. If you're there to truly document and understand a location and kind of propel it forward, you need to have another set of eyes come in and see what they can capture. To me, everybody has different skill sets. Everybody has different personalities. And if there is something that's intelligent there, I feel like that, you know, they may react different to a different person. So whenever Brad came in, he was not a paranormal investigator, but he had a different take and a different style of how to investigate. And we kind of just meshed together, and we were able to take the house to the next level. And then once we did it for a few years, we were like, okay, well, what's next? We know how authentic Alice's house is. We have all this stuff documented. So we wanted to put it to the test and let one of the most, you know, profound and well-respected people in the field come in and see what they thought. So we had Steve come down, and, you know, it intrigued him enough to do a documentary, which we did. And then we wanted to bring physicists in and really understand the whys and the whats to the house. Because if something could be explained, we were excited to understand that, you know, not everything has to be supernatural, paranormal, but it's neat to be able to do your due diligence, and they can't give you a rational answer that gets you more excited. So yes, and it was like capturing lightning in a bottle, because with Vera and Kendall and Steve and Brad, Alice, all the people, Amy, Sabrina, who worked on the film together. You know, we put our time in, we got the evidence, and it kind of worked out. The story is great because it's more of a human interest story. It's not a jump scare. And then if you watch The House in Between, which if you haven't, I suggest you do,
We have.
the last 10 minutes of the film, you know what I'm talking about, with Steve and Kendall and Brad in the house, you know, that's kind of like the paranormal Powerball, as I've said before, because how rare is it to have something dramatic like that happen as we're wrapping film in, but we're able to capture it on film. So it sounds weird, but to go all the way back to your question, do they always hear us? I think they do, because before we started filming, we explained in detail how important it was for them to interact with us while these people were in the house, because we're trying to tell your story and to validate that you're real. So it could be with coincidence, but I don't think it is. So for something that dramatic to happen while they were in the house, I think it's great.
I agree.
I think it's amazing. You know, and the book, what can people take away after reading the book?
Great question. So let me run down real quick. So it's 11 chapters. I just kind of want to read off the chapters real quick, and then I'll kind of answer that question. So there's an introduction, a background, kind of like my story that I was telling you earlier. There's locations. So I chose 7 locations to highlight for a certain reason. I did a chapter on equipment, and I chose 10 pieces of equipment to talk about. And those are 10 pieces of equipment that anybody should implement into their investigations to be as efficient as possible. 7 of those 10 pieces are not paranormal tools. For example, one of them, number 4, is music. So obviously, if you never put music into your investigations, you should definitely do it. Whether it's period music, whether it's relevant, you know, it's a universal language, and we've gotten such great responses when we incorporate music. So equipment, really cool chapter. Haunted objects kind of breaks down that whole genre. And, you know, just because you buy a doll off eBay and it says haunted, it may not be haunted. So do your due diligence and see if you actually have a haunted object. Structured investigation, as I said, that kind of gives you the ABCs of how to do a proper investigation to be efficient and to, you know, best capture some evidence. Chapter 7 is teaching the spirits. Chapter 8 is doppelganger. Chapter 9 is paranormal pursuit. And what that chapter is about is it's okay to want to be successful in this field. You know, I think people are so like standoffish, like, well, I want to do this because I'm an investigator. I don't want to be on TV. Well, this chapter is honest because I've been trying to be on TV for a long time. And it's not to be famous. It's to be able to share my skill set and what I'm doing with the world, to document evidence, and to be able to travel locations where obviously I'm married. We have 4 kids, so I can't go travel all over the country all the time. But if you were on a TV show, you have a bigger platform to be able to go do more things and to really, you know, do what you love. And if you're an investigator and you could be able to do this and be paid to do this, your dream job, why would you not want to do that? You know, I've seen people shame people for wanting to be on TV, and there's people who want to do it for the wrong reasons. But, you know, Paranormal Pursuit, that chapter is all about doing things the right way and giving, you know, it's okay to be successful in the field. We're very proud of The House in Between. It was the number one paranormal documentary of all time. And you know, and telling Alice's story is super important. Yeah. So, and we're proud of that. And I hope the book does well, but it's educating people and putting out what we do and sharing our skill set and our love and our passion with the world. And that's okay to do. Chapter 10 is The House in Between. Obviously, the long chapter, kind of some behind the scenes of the documentary. And then chapter 11 is Where Does the Journey End? And that talks a little bit about, you know, I've been doing this for 13 years. And, you know, is there a point in your career in the paranormal where, you know, you're just kind of done with it, over it? Is there, like, what's your end goal? Like, if you're a paranormal investigator, like, are you just going to do this until you die? Is there something where you, like, you're searching for that you want, you know, once you hit that level, do you walk away? So it kind of dives into that. So the book's an easy read. I think it's got a lot of really good information. It's got a lot of fun stories. It's got a lot of fun visuals. So I think it's a book that you could sit down. It's 159 pages, you know, so you could sit down in 2 or 3 readings and kind of get through it. And I just want people to be able to take a few pieces of information away, have some cool stories, and see some, you know, some fun visuals. So I'm not necessarily a writer. I didn't want to get too deep, but I wanted people to be able to take away some honesty and to help them in the paranormal field.
I like that. And the takeaways, there's a lot, you know, you can gain knowledge from this book, and you're open, you're honest, you know, you put your integrity.
And I think we're always learning.
It.
Yeah,
it's always a learning curve.
We're always learning. I don't think there's ever really a true end to any of this, because we just keep learning. There's so much to learn.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you know, the thing is, like, The House in Between and other hauntings, I always ask the question, do you think that the way we're going on, so is that spiritual world, because we created time and they don't have time, that they're just doing their thing?
Yeah.
Has any one of these spirits from House in Between or any medium maybe that worked on that case, has the spirit said, hey, can you do this in return?
No, that's a great question. We've had direct responses. We've had our names called. We've pegged an association with, if you watch the House in Between, the town burned twice of fire, smoke. We've gotten something pegged to how somebody died on the property, but we've never had them ask specifically, if we do this, could you do this? They've never asked for anything in response.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've tried that on a couple of investigations here at Our Home back years ago, when we'd say, hey, you know, spirit, to the spirit world, what can we do for you?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what we can do for you. And some of them, well, there was one years ago that says they wanted us to kill somebody.
Yeah, some of them had
to one of my
out.
Friends and gave us a phone number of the murderer. It was crazy.
Wow.
In Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy, crazy. And they look, you know, to the listener out there, this is real. This is not make-believe. I know some of it sounds above and beyond.
Oh, no.
And
say, look,
next,
I
but
say
it's really
we're crazy. Yeah, we're crazy until we're not. So,
yeah.
But I like that. That's a really good thing. And as an investigator myself, you forget. We're asking so much of these spirits, these entities, we never take a step back to say, what can we do for you? Yeah, you know, and I think in a way with the House in Between, we've asked to help tell their story, but I think that's as far as we've gone. You know, we want to help tell their story, but specific things. And it's weird too, because we've learned personalities and going back to analog, and I want to throw this out there real quick. So why I love audio so much is your fingerprints are unique, right? So if you get arrested, they fingerprint you. So your vocal tone is unique as well. So if you look at vocal tone patterns, we've been able to kind of document over the years a deep male vocal tone that's the same on dozens and dozens of recordings. We've also gotten a female vocal tone that's very high pitched, and we have her documented over and over again. So I think vocal tones, if you spend time on location over and over again, it's interesting to see if you can capture the same voices, same vocal tone patterns over and over again. That gives a lot of relevance to the field. Ghost Adventures did a really neat episode at Johnny Cash's house in Jamaica a few years back, where they captured a voice that sounded like Johnny Cash. So they took a interview with him just speaking, and they did the vocal tone spikes, you know, as him talking. They took the EVP and laid it over, and it was almost identical. So another reason I love audio.
Wow.
That's wild.
There's actually a guy on YouTube who does that. He tries to communicate with the other side. And, you know, it's a big question mark. Is he actually communicating with Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson? You became
right.
A Facebook friend of mine.
Yeah.
He has a show on YouTube. You know, he's got a tremendous audience. He has his own equipment that he invented. It raises a lot of questions, you know. You know, because I also believe that, you know, that this realm, that is another realm, and that there is a place that's a higher energy. Some people call it heaven, where, you know, it's above and beyond all of this. And then I always ask that question, well, why are they earthbound? Mm-hmm. And are they earthbound because we want them to be during investigations? Mm-hmm. Or are they multidimensional, where we just can't comprehend that, which means that they go... The spirit goes on so many platforms that it's everywhere at the same time.
Yeah.
The same way people have near-death experiences and they talk about, look, I've seen all of you. I've seen this person mm-hmm. in this state
yeah.
and this state, and I've seen you in the hospital room, and I see mom crying at home. And they're like, I can see everything like 360 degree,
yeah.
which leads me to believe that we ourselves, when we cross over, are multidimensional beings. You know,
right.
we try to say, well, we're just one place, but I'm not buying we're in one place. We're either earthbound spirits or I believe
yeah.
that our existence just goes on through different levels.
Yeah. And my wife's a nurse, and she was a hospice nurse for a long time. Some of the stories that she's told me, because she was there with them, a lot of the people when they passed, and just some of the things they would say, right, like minutes or seconds before they were passing, like calling out to people and like saying what they see, before, like literally mid sentence as they pass. I mean,
yeah,
it's like, it's so like relevant. It's like, it can't be a coincidence, you know, like people that and things they shouldn't know, they're able to like verbalize it and say it right as they're passing. And that's been, I mean, dozens of times that's happened throughout her years in the nursing field.
Wow. Yeah, I'm a strong believer in that.
Well, I mean, the hour just flew by as usual. It always does. We have a great guest. Thank you.
Yeah, tell everyone where they can find you, the book, where they can buy the book, and all that good stuff.
Yes. So I'll start with The House in Between because I love The House in Between. So go to thehouseinbetween.com. If you've not seen The House in Between, definitely check it out. And we're still actively investigating. The House in Between is on 26 streaming platforms. It is a great, great human interest story. It's got great paranormal, great science. And I think it's important that we mesh science and the supernatural together and kind of blend it together. In the equipment, there's a device that I use that's a science-based device, but we've made it a paranormal device. So always think outside the box because everything we're doing is, you know, we're trying things. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So don't be afraid to fail because eventually you'll do something that works and it's amazing. And for me, John Bullard, para, para.com. So you can buy A Peek Through the Veil on my website and John Bullard on Facebook, John Bullard on Instagram. I make it pretty easy to find me. So definitely check it out. And again, we're actively investigating The House in Between and we're excited that people watch it over and over again. And hopefully there's more House in Between to come. We're excited about that. And so A Peek Through the Veil is what I'm pushing right now. So I was trending number one in a little topic on Amazon, so I felt special. So go buy the book and let's keep it trending. Thank you. Hey, yes, it's a small thing in life that matter.
Congratulations on that.
Get that book. John, thank you so much for coming on. You're a great guest. We definitely want to have you back on again.
Yes, thank you. And have an amazing night. And thank you all the listeners. And we want to have a special thank you to Carnation for sponsoring the show. We love them. Join us next Monday night on United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans.
And stay tuned for Lorelei.
Yes, The Angel Rock.
The Angel Rock. Everyone have a great night. This is Horsefly Chronicles Radio signing off. Another awesome guest.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.